cliffcentral.com.
Yo, Chisampama by Senyaka. Those are for those of us that are old school. That is Chisampama, the version by Clock Slipara featuring Senyaka. Welcome, Sanbonani Nonke, to Frankly Speaking on Cliff Central, 9 to 10 a.m. I'm still flying solo. Andrew Levy is still out of town, which means it's me, myself, and I having a conversation with very fascinating people. Today we're discussing, we're continuing with the series, What Does It Mean to Be Black? But over the past three episodes, we focused on what it means to be black at an individual level. This time around, we're going to be focusing and moving the conversation towards what does it mean to be black at an organizational level. We hear of BEE companies, black empowerment companies. We hear of the Black Management Forum. We hear of the Black Business Council. But what does it mean at the heart of it to be a black business? Is it just about ownership, or does it have something to do with also the culture? Last week, we heard from our guests that blackness is about more than just the skin color. It's about race. It's about a shared history. So today, we have guests who are going to try and help us understand and dig deeper into the idea of what it means to be a black organization. Joining us right now from Cape Town is the president of the Association of Black Securities and Investment Professionals, Ms. Triphosa Ramano. And then later on, we've got the Vice President of the Black Business Council, Sandile Zungu, joining us. But let's jump right into it. By the way, if you want to join us, you can, or if you want to make a comment, you can join us on Twitter. Tweet me at Rory Shabalala, or you can send us a WeChat message at cliffcentral.com. Right, so I've done everything that I needed to do, including paying homage to Black Coffee there with Chisampama. Let's get the show on the road. Good morning, Triphosa.
Good morning, Bulelani. It's Bulelani.
No, this is Rory Sang. How are you?
Oh, sorry, Rory Sang. I thought I was still with Bulelani. I'm very good. Thanks, Amy.
Thank you very much. Bulelani is our wonderful producer who's put this together. We believe you are joining us from the airport. Thank you so much for joining us before your flight.
I'm boarding in 9:20.
I hope that you're up for a tough conversation, because for the past 3 weeks we have had people coming into studio. We've asked them a very simple question: what does it mean to be black? And we leave the conversation more confused than when we came into the conversation. So you, as the president of the Association of Black Securities and Investment Professionals, what does it mean to be black?
I think we need to contextualize it first from an individual level, as you have been doing throughout the last 2 weeks. Being black is not a choice. We didn't choose to be black. We were born and we are where we are now. But basically, if you have a choice, you have freedom, okay? Mm. So without choice, you don't have a freedom. So what happens is that now, as an organization, what we did in 1995, we realized that we're just getting to new democracy. But in getting to new democracy, we won the political battle. Then the key issue is that here we are blacks now. We are educated, okay? Mm. We have a choice. The atmosphere provides us with a choice. So what do we choose to be? We choose to be to excel in whatever we want to excel, but how do we help each other? That's when we had to form the organization of APSIS. But as APSIS, you just try to highlight, to say, here I am Triphosa, I am black, I'm a chartered accountant, I'm qualified like everybody else. But why does it become so difficult for me to do certain things, okay? Mm. Not that I can't do, but simply because of that skin color that I didn't choose to be, why does it become difficult? Then as organization, we're trying to create that awareness to say being black does not necessarily mean you are inferior, doesn't mean you are not competent, but you are the same as any other person. you can actually compete like any other person. You can run like any. We are all human beings, okay? Just give us an opportunity. So as an organization, we're trying to instill that and try to support each other, even from an emotional level. We say we still have a long way in this country because of, in the past, still things have been classified according to race, color, whatever, all of those things.
Yes.
But now we just say we want to move on. Give us an opportunity. As an organization, we're working as a lobby group to try and instill the fact that black people can do it.
Triphosa, now the constitution of ABSIP defines black simply as African, Indian, and colored. And I hear in what you're explaining that it's about this thing that you didn't choose, your color. But Steve Biko had a different view, one in which blackness was about more than just a racial group. I think he described it more even as a mental attitude. Why have you chosen to seemingly limit the definition of blackness simply to the color and not to a mental attitude? Is it not the case that there are some people walking around in black skins but perpetuating what one might call non-black agendas?
I think when we started the organization, we had to start from somewhere. And then we look at how black was defined in terms of the documentation. And you actually look at people who have been previously discriminated against, okay? And when you look at that, then you have to classify yourself as a group, and we use what was defined in the documentation of the country. Because this is what defines to be black. It must be black, colored, African, and Indian in that. Yeah.
And so if you think about beyond the skin color, is there anything beyond the black skin color that defines a black professional? Is there something more, to use the words of Obanewa Aponsa, something more than just our color, but even just the substance of blackness that goes beyond just the skin color, that you try and advocate within the organization or indeed amongst the investment professionals?
I think with the investment professionals, we advocate to say, being black, firstly, is something that you didn't choose, okay? But attitude, you choose, okay? You choose to be mean, you choose to be very good, you choose to say, I grew up in a much privileged environment, and in that privileged environment, I don't want to be associated with a person who comes from the township. That is a choice that you make, okay?
Yeah.
And then we're saying, bar the choice, okay? Because that's part of the freedom. This is where we are. This is our grouping. We will advocate for those that want to move forward, okay? But if you choose not to be part of us, it's your choice. But you're not going to define what you should be doing, what you should not be doing. And that is why you see, even in organizations, we always advocate to people to say, in organizations, some people occupy positions, okay? And then they occupy those positions simply because of the laws that we had and all of those things. But as well, because of their competencies as well. But they also forget that they didn't just get there. If people did not fight before that, they didn't just get there purely by that competence. Otherwise, we would not be in this organization. But when they're there, they forget, okay? Because no man exists in an island. They forget that I have been put in there to push a particular agenda over and above my competency level. But they forget where they're coming from.
What is it that you would want them to remember as black people in those organizations? So what I'm hearing you say is that there must be something distinct about the way that they lead. There must be something distinct about the way that they make decisions that indicates that they understand that there is a broader agenda to be pursued there. What are the types of things that we'd want to see practically to say, you know, this person has not forgotten?
I think practically, when you are being put into those positions, yes, one, you're expecting a lot. You must compete like any other person, okay? Number two, don't forget where you're coming from. So you need to make sure that you bring along the others. Sometimes people are happy to be the only black in the boardroom, the only woman in the boardroom, the only. Then you are suffering from that syndrome. So you need to actually make sure that you bring along, you mentor the young people, you advocate in that position. Of course, you're holding the position of power. Use that position of power to actually advocate to say equality, let's mentor, let's change the grouping of the organizations, okay? So many people forget about that and they don't do that because if you are sitting in that position, you can change the policy of the organization. You can do the consultation because you have the voice that people can listen, and you also have the power. But people, most of the time, they forget it, and that is why after 20 years, we're still talking the same language.
I think that's the nub of my concern, is that if you listen to young black people and why they leave corporates in droves, it's not so much that my manager is black or my manager is white, but it is more the culture within those organizations. Now, do you expect it? And as the Association of Black Investment Professionals, have you defined a black culture, an organizational culture that is accommodating to black individuals, or one that allows black people to thrive? Is that part of the type of conversations that you have, or is it simply just about putting a person there who is going to make decisions that are based on non-blackness, so to say?
We haven't defined it, but the way we look at it, because we believe, because we are a voluntary organization, okay? And in that voluntary organization, we have a common purpose. And in that common purpose, you think that when somebody is appointed in a particular position, they understand, that's why we come, because we support you, they understand what is the bigger agenda that we are going to push. We want to make sure that in organization, we are representative of a demographic of this country, we are united, we must be one thing. But at the same time, don't forget your young brothers and sisters behind. Continue with that particular sort of agenda. So we haven't defined it as an organization in writing, but it is within the DNA and the expectation that when you get there, you should be able to drive that force. I'll give you an example about myself. Every organization that I have been, I've always tried to advocate to say, this is my position of power. We have a policy of this and this and this. And from there onwards, you push that agenda. And then, but you follow the right consultative processes. And organizations change the fabric because of that.
Is there such a thing as a black management culture, do you think? Or is there just a generic culture? Because we tend to adopt some organizational practices and the way we do things in organizations, and we assume that they are lacking in a cultural background, but they're actually shaped by the fact that corporates are dominated by white males, for example. Is there a black management culture where a black person, Triphosa, can walk in and fundamentally change the way that people are led, people are interacted with, people and the way decisions are made, tapping into her blackness, so to speak?
I think that we should look at organization in the way that what does organization try to do. But culture is evolved. It depends who is leading, who are the people that are leading at a particular sort of organization. So, for example, when you get to an organization, you adapt its culture. But it does not necessarily mean you must change yourself. Some of the rules, for example, when you look at some of the policies, we know as black people that when there's a death in the family, okay, and it's a very close family member, the mourning process takes a long time, okay? And the policies in organization, you've got family leave of 3 days, and then the rest is your annual leave. So you need, when you work on those policies, you need to be able to say to management, understand certain dynamics in the culture of black community. That if my mother died and I'm working on a project, I don't expect you to phone me to say, where is that project? Okay? Because I'm in a mourning process. So those are some of the things that you sensitize. This is why in organizations, they work on programs that call cultural diversity, because we don't understand where we are coming from and how we interact with each other is based on the fact that I don't know who you are. I'm just assuming you're here. You have to adapt. It's either you do it our way or you get out of the door. But it doesn't have to be like that. We have to understand each other at an individual level, so where I come from, because it has an impact in terms of my performance in the organization.
Ms. Ramano, the 2016-27 for Investment Managers B Economic Survey notes that of the 8.9 trillion rand of assets under management within your sector, only 4.6% of those are managed by black asset managers. Now, obviously, that is a very pitiful proportion of the broader pie. So black asset managers are essentially responsible for allocating 408 billion rand worth of capital. Is there anything in the manner in which these assets are allocated, though, as little as they might be in the broader proportion, there's still 408 billion. A lot can be done with that. Is there anything in the way in which asset allocation decisions are made by those asset managers that indicates their understanding or their pushing of a black agenda? Or do they simply perpetuate the same things that other organizations that are non-black perpetuate?
I think we'll probably that requires a different time to discuss, because that's the long topic. The key issue is that the problem is that we have gatekeepers, okay? Mm. And then the gatekeepers will always give the money to people that they know. Sometimes there are many black companies who have been performing number one, number two throughout for the last 10 years, okay? Mm. But when it comes to allocation, they are not being considered in that. So, and the other thing that can make it to make sure that it is proportional is to change the law, make it a licensing issue. The mining charter makes the licensing issue. If you don't have 26%, you don't get your mining license. I think the same thing within the financial services industry. Make it a licensing issue, okay?
Yes.
Because to get that financial services board license, you need to meet this minimum requirement. Because voluntarily to say you can be conscious about it, you can do it properly. Unfortunately, you can't achieve all of those in 20 years. 20 years is actually a lot of time. So you just have to actually make sure that you go into a licensing issue.
But before we let you go, I know we've got 1 minute left with you. That is, of course, at the point at which the asset owners give the asset managers a mandate. But at the point at which the asset managers make decisions about where they're going to invest that money, most of those decisions are made in favor of the untransformed JSE companies that we still complain about. To what extent are we seeing black asset managers beginning to define a black credit risk model, for example, that allocates capital towards other sectors of the economy that they have a lower risk appetite for? So, for example, townships, where most of black people have grown up in, they might have a lower risk profile for townships than what a white asset manager would have. Are we seeing them do that, or are they simply putting their money where white asset managers would have traditionally put their money?
Remember, when the asset owner gives you a mandate, it comes with a mandate as to where you should put that money, okay?
Yeah.
So they're defined by that and also by the FSC. But they are products. We need people to start putting products together. And this is what I'm picking up. Most of the black managers are sitting around trying to come up with an innovative approach to say, what sort of product can we actually put in the market that will ensure, make sure that we change the socio-economic culture of this country at the same time while you are making the decent return.
Yeah.
You understand?
Yeah.
So that's basically some of the conversation. That's why I'm saying you need more time to discuss this topic, because it's much broader than if you look at it on a narrow basis.
Okay, so we have to let you go now, but if you say we need more time, then I guess that's a commitment from you to come through so we can have a full hour with you and debate these issues.
Yeah, okay.
Fantastic. Thank you, man. Safe travels.
Thank you. Bye.
Jeez. So there we have it. It's unclear to me whether I think that these black organizations have actually spent time. You know, we spoke last week and the week before that about the essence of blackness. We continue to speak about black professionals, but it's unclear to me yet, given the answers that Triphosa has given, on whether there is an understanding of what does it mean beyond the skin color to have a person who is black. What? How do we move beyond the skin color and move into areas of black culture and how that is practiced and translated into the corporate setting and into decision making? It is a sad reality that only 408 billion rand of the 8.9 trillion rand that is under management, that is capital that gets invested. Only 408 billion rand of that, which represents just 4.6% of all assets, is managed by black asset managers. But then the question is, of that 408 billion rand, what are the decisions that they're taking that indicate that they are black asset managers? Or do they simply continue to perpetuate the same sort of thinking cycles that other asset managers, for example, white asset managers, would perpetuate. So I think it is worth more conversation. She says that we need more time to discuss these things. I would certainly love to have her back in studios, and we will do that. Moving forward, the next guest that we'll have is Sandile Zungu. He is a vice president at the Black Business Council. Now, there's also another interesting conversation because the Black Business Council says it is the voice of black business in South Africa. It is quite interesting if you read some of their material and so on. They continue to say that nothing's changed. The situation in the country remains the same. I'm confused, though. We do have some black leaders within business. We have some black CEOs, but to what extent are we seeing them make the changes that they need to make, or to drive what Triforce mentioned as the black agenda? Are they even doing that, or are they simply sitting on their laurels? It's one thing that, relative to the broader population, we don't have. A lot of black business managers, but of those that are there, are they demonstrating at least an understanding, or are they demonstrating that they're pushing this thing called a black agenda? Again, the question becomes, what is a black agenda? Black, as we have spent the past 3 weeks discussing, is a very confusing thing. When you go beyond simply just the color of your skin, what does it mean? How does it mean in terms of the way that you lead people? We know that culturally, it's understandable. You know, when you're sitting there in a group of friends and they say, that is such a black thing to do. We get it, right? We get that, that is such a black thing to do. But in an organization, are we able to look at leaders and say, wow, that is such a black way to lead? And who are the leadership prototypes or role models for black leadership that show a very distinct way of leading that we can ascribe to blackness? In as much as we say that corporates are defined a lot by white male character in the way in which they're just hardcore, very individualistic, and so on. They seem to be molded in the image of white males, as has been said numerous times. Now, the question is that if they were to be created in the mold of black females, what would that look like? What does that look like in terms of the decisions they take? What does that look like in terms of where their strategies, where they decide they're going to compete, how they decide how they're going to compete, and is there enough emphasis being placed on that? Have we actually thought about presenting an alternative business culture, one that moves us beyond just replicating the same old, and beginning to own the space as black people? I am talking a lot. We're going to get our guest on just in a bit. And Bulelani doesn't want to join me. He is walking out of the studio. Balisa is also just totally not interested. But I think it is important that we just make sure that we understand. The conversation thus far has started with an individual look. What does it mean to be a black person? But people are now using this as, you know, black organizations. Now we need to ask the question, what does it mean to be a black organization? And that's the conversation that we're having today. So interesting statistics, of course, coming from 27Four Investments, who do this BEE economics survey every year, that so little money in the economy is managed by black people. Now, a lot of that money is black people's money. A lot of that money is in the hands of the Public Investment Corporation, which is pension fund money, and a lot of the money sitting in there is the pensions of black people. Now, in which ways are the decisions that are made in terms of investing that money? How do they favor the communities in which those black people come from? It is one thing that you have all of this money and it's black people's money, but if that money is being used to continue to perpetuate the economic inequalities that happen in South Africa, then there's something horribly wrong for the system. And we need to look at it and ask ourselves, what does it mean? When I asked about the credit risk models, whenever investors decide who they're going to loan money to, or even who they're going to invest in, they run, they do these things called credit risk models. That's basically, it's like you going and asking for a loan at the bank, and they say, okay, based on the fact that you are this age, or you're doing this, or you're doing that, we're going to loan you money, or we're not going to loan you money, or we're going to loan you money at a higher interest rate. Those are largely objective, but there is subjectivity in it. So how do you decide that going into a township is more risky than going into a suburb, for example? If I tell my white friend and say, hey, let's go to Alex, for example, at a certain time, the question then is, how are you going to feel? How am I going to feel, and how are you going to feel? We're both facing the same risks, and we're all facing the same conditions in Alex. But then the question is, what do we then do moving into there? How do we get into that? We go in with very different perceptions of risk. And how are those perceptions of risk then translated into the way that we make decisions around where we invest and what we do with those investments and how we monitor those investments? All right. So we now have the Vice President of the Black Business Council, Mr. Sandile Zungu, on the line, joining us, discussing this topic, what does it mean to be black, and particularly what does it mean to be a black organization. Good morning, Mr. Zungu.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
It's a great pleasure. Thank you for coming through. Mr. Zungu, we just got off the line with Tryphosa Ramano, the president of the Association for Black Securities and Investment Professionals. And we were asking a very simple question that we've been doing this series now for the past 3 weeks. And we found that in asking this question, it's actually a little bit more complicated than we thought it was. What does it mean to be black? So you, as the Black Business Council, also say you are Black Business. You could say you're just Business Council, but you say you're Black Business Council. What is it about you that makes you black?
Okay, just for clarity, I was until yesterday the Vice President of the Black Business Council.
Okay.
As a former leadership collective, we've handed over the reins to a new leadership team.
Fantastic.
But I still, obviously, am very entitled to can answer that question, which
yes.
is a very important question. You know, in the 1970s, Stephen Bantu Biko, and the Black Consciousness Movement made it possible for all of us to assert ourselves in terms of who we are. 30, 40 years later, it is still fashionable for Black people, when they're assembled and organizing themselves, to present themselves first and foremost as Black people.
Mm.
And to identify themselves as such, in part as a way of saying we have a shared past, we have a shared destiny, and in another way to say we are proud of who we are, but at the same time not saying so with any sense of arrogance or looking down upon those who are non-black.
Mm.
So in a way, for us as a Black Business Council, we debated this issue very extensively. We came up with a number of permutations, and we felt at the end of that discourse that it was probably appropriate to call ourselves the Black Business Council. And I think that argument still holds up to today.
So calling yourselves a Black Business Council, you reference Bantu Stephen Biko. who said that blackness was beyond just the color of one's skin. It was a mental attitude and so on. So what is the mental attitude of a black business council that would distinguish it as a specifically black organization?
We see ourselves as, believe it or not, as one of the very few organizations in the world that are seeking to promote the ascendancy of black people in the economic sphere. The objective of promoting black people in the economic sphere and the rationale thereof is underpinned by a very sad set of realities. If you look at where black people are, whether in a continent like Africa, where the dominant population group, or in diaspora, whether in Americas, including the Caribbean, or in Europe or Asia, we tend to occupy the lowest rungs in society, especially in the economic sphere. We tend to be more in the streets begging. We tend to be providers of labor, cheap labor for that. We tend to be pleading for, call it, special dispensation on economic sphere. Even in countries like South Africa, where we're a majority, we own less than 10% of the economy. Some will say 3% only. Let's be generous and say 10%, but it's still very, very low compared to the balance which is by extension owned by and controlled by white South Africans who constitute less than 10% of the population of this country. So the rationale for us to organize ourselves and for us to promote this cause is not a South African almost like an objective. It's a global objective. And to the extent that we inspire our counterparts in diaspora to wake up and do it for themselves, it becomes very important. And to the extent that we encourage people in Kenya whose economy is controlled or is dominated by people of Indian descent who may, yes, have settled in Kenya for many years or decades. If you look at economies like Ghana, people who control the trade will be people of Lebanese descent. So this sickness of black people being in the lowest rungs of the economic ladder, even in Africa, is something that needs to be tackled head on. And the role of organizations like the Black Business Council being at the forefront of such becomes very, very important. So we're not engaging in an exercise, self-serving, short-termism, and narrow. This is a very, very much part of a broader global movement to say to black people, the lowest ranks, that's not where you belong, ultimately. You are destined for greatness, and you better organize yourselves.
Mr. Zungu, now, you speak about black people obviously occupying or owning a very small proportion of the economic wealth of the country in relation to their proportions in terms of population numbers. So, of course, that is a legitimate struggle in terms of making sure that black black people own more of the economy, but to the extent of that which black people already own. You mentioned that 10% of, let's say, assets are in the hands of black people, to be generous. What in the way that those assets are invested tells us that there are black companies? So we see a lot of those assets invested in white companies and for minority stakes, and that money then being recycled and being reinvested in other white companies, you're not seeing that money necessarily going to grow black businesses, other black businesses. So it's one thing that the money is in the hands of black people, but is their mindset of those black people and are the decisions that they're making reflective of an understanding of the black agenda, as Triforce Romano mentioned?
Look, let's make no mistake. The challenges that are facing us are enormous. Someone worked it out that a rand in a Jewish community will circulate 18 times before it leaves that community. They will trade among themselves and encourage others to actually come and spend money with the Jewish service providers, who will take the proceeds and buy property from other Jewish estate agents or Jewish sellers. There is absolutely nothing wrong with that. The higher sense of consciousness among them is probably among other things that makes them very successful. When black people organize themselves and want to emulate that, there will be a flood of self-haters among ourselves, who will even frown at the Black Business Council calling itself black, anything. There will naturally be opposition from our compatriots who are not black, who will see this as a threat. And they will use the media to castigate those who are at the forefront of such an endeavor. I think there's ample evidence to that effect. But there's a flood of issues that we have to address. And Rome was never built in one day. And let's not drown simply from the enormity of the challenges ahead of us. Let's bite this big elephant piece by piece. We've got a huge backlog. And so it may well be that even just, you know, soaking in our system the fact that the Black Business Council is called black and allowing people to mull over this issue and probably appreciate and you know, help it to, or use it to build the consciousness among people. Even if you take 2 decades to do that and rebuild the self-esteem among our people, it's a step in the right direction. Of course, we don't have too much time on our side. We've got to still tackle these issues. Now, once we've got a business, what is the extent of your involvement in the business? What sort of sectors do you invest in? And how to ensure that the wealth they've created benefits the needy among ourselves? Those are some of the challenges that we must not push to the side.
Yeah.
And let's appreciate them, but let's be very careful not to flood ourselves with worries and say, you know, as if any of these challenges is the singular most important challenge. The challenge is about how do you move black people up the economic ladder, or in a holistic manner.
Mr. Zungu, so that being understood, I think the question then still remains. So you referenced the Jewish example that Rand moves around 18 times. But then we look at what's called BEE companies or black investment companies, and you look at their investment decisions and you realize that their first rand is immediately going into white companies. They're not going into black companies to grow those black companies, to take their capital and grow the capital base of black companies. The money immediately gets invested into white companies. What does that reflect? Because then you simply investing right alongside white money, and you're not growing black business. So how do we think about a black investment culture or mindset?
Well, I mean, like I said, Rorisang, you know, the challenges you are putting on the table are just some of the challenges. There are many other challenges. Mm. You know, I will argue that maybe for me, very important is to raise the social consciousness among black people, to appreciate who they are, and to ensure that even social will become a majority. At the moment, we're a social minority. You know, things are centered on a Eurocentric way of life. As even some of our own historical and traditional beliefs are still deemed to be superstitious. And you cannot even begin to win that argument around how to build black capital when people still frown upon being perceived as black, when people still don't want to associate with black because they see that as a symbol of inferiority. So I'm saying that you know, the challenges you are highlighting are probably not even secondary challenges, they're tertiary challenges in the context of people who don't appreciate the power that they possess in them, who are still mesmerized by 400 years of colonialism and apartheid. Mm. So there's a lot of work still to be done on the social consciousness of their people. And that notwithstanding, you are raising a very important question. How do we ensure that among those who are socially and psychologically and mentally sharp, how do we impress upon them to do more with the capital that they've acquired? It is true that you know, some of the criteria that we use for investment is, how can I make a 25% RR this year and next year? And how can I secure that? Is by investing in companies with a track record of profit history. And by extension, those will tend to be not black-owned and controlled companies, because the track record is possibly too thin on the ground. And therefore, that becomes a self-perpetuating, you know, myth. It becomes a self-perpetuating, you know, effort at undermining ourselves. So there are many other investment criteria that will have to be looked at if black capital needs to, you know, grow through assistance from ourselves. Mm. So I suppose the point I'm making is that your question is a very important question, but it doesn't have a simplistic answer. Because if for example, you ask Sandile, and say, Sandile, you have a superior consciousness. I've heard you on radio talk about developing black capital. Now give me the money. I want to build my radio station. And I'll say, look, but I would love to. But the mandate of my own family trust says I must reinvest this money. But with the business plan that talks about an RR of 25%, and let me not invest all of it in startups, maybe only 10% in startups, and the balance in established businesses with a track record of profit performance. Mm. And that basically cuts out a lot of, call it aspirant black entrepreneurs who may want to develop themselves at the back of those who have succeeded.
Bab Zungu, let me test something with you. Does the following have any meaning to you? If I say Manzini, Geda, Kakwabini, Sengwayo, Hamashe, Nyamakaishi, Isha. Does that any of that make any sense to you?
You know, it makes me want to ululate. It makes me want to ululate.
Yes.
In any event, thank you so much for doing this, that research. Mina ngu sandile kazungu kamanzi nganya marish ngabathizile.
Yebo.
Hamash tona ngomethe manyeni. Umshosho mnyama
ngina.
Mina ngatshana.
Now that is a uniquely black thing. It speaks to black culture. You and I just had a secret handshake that a lot of our listeners would not even understand where it's coming from. Is there a black style of leadership in a similar sense where it is a uniquely black thing that you say, you know, that man is leading like a black person of heightened consciousness? Is there a black style of leadership? Because it seems like, you know, you can't tell the difference. If you look at the decisions that are made at a corporate level, if you look at the strategies and so on, you can't really, it doesn't matter whether a CEO is black or white, the decisions seem to reflect a sameness. Is there such a thing where we can, just as we've done your Stagazello, do the same thing for within a black leadership context?
Look, there are people who are eminent scholars on leadership. I think if you talk to someone like Ruel Khoza, I'll encourage you to invite him sometime. Mm. He possibly has done a lot more research on on leadership, values based, authentic African kind of leadership in the corporate context. I'm still mulling over that question because you've provoked me into thinking, really, using that analogy of Itazelo. You know, if there is any comparison into the first styles of leadership, I think there is a way in which we arrive at consensus. There is a way in which we lead our charges or people who are under us, that can be analyzed and described as uniquely African or uniquely us. The only problem is that in the corporate sphere, because the dominant philosophy in corporate leadership tends to be Eurocentric. The people who make it to the front page of the Fortune magazine or the Forbes magazines will tend to be people who have made it in that context. And they are described as hard, ruthless, single-minded, as dictatorial, having dictatorial streaks. Mm. And people want to emulate those to succeed in the corporate ladder. So context becomes very important. Therefore, the African style of leadership in the corporate environment probably doesn't have much precedence is worthy of elevating and talking about, because that's not, if it is there, it's not accompanied by, performance prowess.
Yeah.
And therefore, it can only be celebrated, but as a novelty, rather than as the most deserving case where celebrated.
Let me then ask a provocative question along that line. What then, if there are those that reflect a black style of leadership or a black leadership culture along with performance, who are the shining lights in this example? One of our listeners is asking a question and saying, why do your organizations such as the Black Business Council, for example, keep quiet at the failings and the dismal failings of some black leaders, because it distorts the image of what black leaders are. Our listener references Claudie Motsoeneng, for example, and say, you know, there's just a deafening silence from the likes of the Black Business Workers' Council and other prominent black leaders. And it is beginning to distort the image and the reputation of black leaders. And it begins to be taken as a given that this is how black people lead. Why is there this silence? And is this also not an erosion of all of the work that you've put in?
Well, I mean, the issue of Saudi is a topical issue. It's not a BBC issue. It's not a black leadership organization issue. It's a South African issue. And I'll be very surprised if the public perception of Saudi will be improved or worsened by a comment from the Black Business Council, either in his defense or in his, call it criticism. And so the question that we often ask, I often ask myself, is who sets the agenda? Mm. And why must black organizations be sucked into other people's agenda? Why must black organizations be forced to prioritize their discourse based on someone else's sense of agency? Why can't they set their own agenda and single-mindedly pursue that agenda and be undisturbed by the clutter? Simply because having an additional voice just won't make any difference. What difference will it make if the BBC issues a statement, persuading SABC to respect, the rulings of the public protector, and to implement the letter and the spirit of what those rulings, including the constitutional court determinations, really mean? Mm. What value will it make? Yes, we'll be counted among those who have spoken out. Oh, fair enough. But what about our own priorities to elevate and to fast-track and to deepen black participation in the economy?
But would you not
Let me just make one example. Mm. One example. You know, the Black Business Council identified the triple PFA. Mm. As a bugbear, we identified it as the single most important impediment to our doing business with the state. And we, from the date of our launch, we said this is our number one enemy. And everything else doesn't matter. If the state cannot procure your services simply because in terms of triple PFA, you do not qualify. But a company like Bidvest will qualify. A company like Caxton will be on top of the list. It doesn't matter. You can scream until you are blue in the face. If you are a constitutional democracy, if you are a government based on law, then you can't do business with the state to the extent that you deem it unnecessary. So we fought against the triple BFA. Yesterday, the president announced that will be repealed. Mm. It's a huge victory, and we've scored a huge victory on our agenda. And that's very important to us.
Baba Zungu, we're running out of time. I'm just worried. I just want to make sure that I understand this. I think we're going to have to get you into studio so we can have a longer conversation about it. But is it not part of your agenda? As I understand it, the Black Business Councils, you had a conference that just ended yesterday. And part of the conference pack speaks about black talent occupying the commanding heights of leadership in corporate South Africa. Now, when you don't speak, and this is not part of your agenda, when people, there's so few black leaders occupying commanding heights of corporate society that when one does not reflect the values that you've spoken about, is that not a big thing? Is that not part of the agenda? Or irrespective of who's driving another agenda, is this not, and this is not a cloudy issue specifically. I think it's an issue across the board. For example, the past chairman of the Black Business Council, Patrice Motsepe, is lead shareholder in African Rainbow Minerals. He has a white CEO and a board made up of 7 black people and 7 white people, and an executive steering committee where 10 of the 24 members are black. He recently launched African Rainbow Capital with 2 white co-CEOs and 3 other black team members in a team made up of 9. So you keep having these things. It's, as I say, it's not just a Claudia Motsoeneng issue, but we are seeing people who occupy, black people who occupy those commanding heights, not reflecting maybe what we would term as a heightened consciousness around blackness. Is that not counter to your agenda as like the Black Business Council?
Like I said, I mean, from time to time, you will have perfect examples of contradictions into the what you stand for and the practice. And I'm not responding to specific the examples that you cited, because I don't believe that I'm well placed to can really give a comment. You will have perfect ironies where we say we let's march to the left, and some of us or the whole body marches to the right, and it is to be expected that, you know, the struggle, as it continues, it veers left and right and goes up and down. But I think what matters is, are we moving forward or are we moving backwards? Our argument is that we've got to be proud of the you know, of the fact that today we are criticizing, you know, or you are alluding to a veiled concern around ARM. The very fact that we are talking about ARM to us is overall success. The very fact that you know, Saudi is a topical issue is itself a success, because here is a person who is at the center of a debate. One may argue, yes, for wrong reasons, because there's a flouting of the rules, quite clearly. There's an attempt at undermining the letter and the spirit of what will have been pronouncements by the public protector and the Constitutional Court, quite clearly. But the very fact that some of our people make for a public discourse is, in my opinion, humble opinion, an indication that we are arriving. Some may argue that we have arrived, but we now have to perfect our narrative. But very important, absolutely important, is that we must just make sure that we don't sidetrack into other people's agendas. Please don't interrupt me on that one.
Yes. It's
very important. We must just make sure that we don't you know, get sucked into pursuing, into being almost a ramrods and lapdogs for other people's agendas. Let's set our own agenda and single-mindedly pursue that agenda.
I'm just, we've run out of time, unfortunately, and I know you also have to go at 10 a.m., but I think this is a conversation worth having further, and we will certainly be in touch about broadening that conversation, because I think it is really important. But thank you so much for joining us this morning.
And thank you for having me. I really appreciate it and enjoyed the discussion.
Thank you, Babzungu. Thank you very much.
Pleasure.
All right, so I have to get out of here. My time is up. Palesa has been indicating. Bulla has just been laughing at me here. So that's it, guys. What do you have to say about that? You can tweet me on at Rory Shabalala and comment. What do you have to say about this? One of our listeners says, The guests that we have are great ambassadors of black excellence. What's your take? So I'm out of here. I'm going to close off with Babes Wodumo Wololo, just because she is the Minister of Finance in South Africa.
This is CliffCentral.com.